Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Happy Friday. I hope you all had a great week, and I hope you have an even greater weekend to follow, as always. First thing I want to do tonight is, well, there's a couple things I need to say tonight. First off, I'd like to wish a happy birthday to our one and only Weaver of Dreams. Happy birthday, Weaver. I hope you're, well, having a good time. And I also would like to let anyone and everyone know that is interested or involved that the shows for Banjo Lynn, the two tribute shows we have, will begin next Monday. We'll have next Monday and next Tuesday from 10 to 12. And we have made accommodations. We have a separate room set up for anyone who's not a member of Late Night Poets so they can gather and read along with the poetry if they'd like to. And if not, they can just listen in and feel fine with that. And as always, we'll be running those shows out of LNP and the new group called In Loving Memory of Banjo Lynn. So just so everyone is aware, and my condolences, and I feel like I should say sorry for your loss to everyone, friends and family. It is a terrible thing. So. With that being said, I'm going to move on, and I have to welcome Rex to the show, but I don't know if I can do that yet because I'm stuck here. anyway, I hope that everyone is doing well. And yes, let me see now. I can get to Rick. I can. He's here somewhere. He doesn't know it. He thinks he's hiding or something. Hello, Rex.
Sorry. Hello. About
that. I was uploading an audio. Uploading a last-minute audio.
Happy birthday,
Kate. Yes. And with us, we have Gray Eyes joining us. So hello,
oh,
Gray
cool.
Eyes. Welcome aboard. Nice to have you here, Gray.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Rex. How are you guys?
Hey, Gray.
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Very good. Very good. Good to have you here. We have
good to be here.
It's always a pleasure. I'm trying to think now. We have a good board tonight. We really do. We have lots of good poetry, and we have a lot of audios. Right. Which is always nice. I think they're fun. I just got a very last-minute audio, so I'm trying to add that in here. So sorry about that.
It's all right.
And what else is happening, Rex? Just along here for a minute or two or three, because now I'm slow.
Oh, not much. Weather's nice, about 75, 80. Nice wind,
ooh,
breeze. Yes.
Nice, nice, nice. Okay. Yeah, well, that's always good. I think it was a little bit, it's just been damp here. It's been a real damp kind of fall so far. And I mean, not that it's been around that long, but it's been raining and damp and kind of cold and I don't know, it's just yuck. You know, I don't like that kind of, you know, weather.
You don't like fall, I take it.
No, I love fall. I do. I like fall. I like spring and fall. I love the colors of fall. Maybe that's really what it is. But I don't like cold and wet weather, and because it, you know, makes me achy and it makes me just, I don't know, miserable. So, you know, I guess there's some truth to that. I don't like fall, but I love the image of fall. I think it's beautiful. Around here, the colors of fall around here at in Pennsylvania, it's such a beautiful display. You know, and not everywhere gets that that beauty, but the ones who do understand it, that's the best part of it all. Take some pictures of it, you know. It's the one season that you can see. But, so anyway, smart ass. I heard that, he's trying to be funny, that great guy. Guess you just don't like fall. I don't know. Is that what your weather is up there in the fall? Cold and damp and wet and all that stuff, Gray?
Yeah, it is.
I know. I've come to learn through the years that when we have a really wet fall, a rainy fall, and stuff like that, we usually don't have a lot of snow in the winter. It's like, you know, I don't know. It's like Mother Nature gets it all out of her system in the fall. And then when we have a drier fall, we have like a heavier load of snow. At least that's what I've noticed. That doesn't mean I'm right. You know, it means I'm a little off. But definitely intriguing when you think like that. So anyway, what else is new? I don't know. Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. What a busy, I don't know. It was a busy kind of weird day here. I don't know. I did a whole lot of nothing. It was like being on a stationary bicycle. Your legs keep going, you don't get anywhere. That was the story of my day. But, we have lots of carryovers from last week. We ended up having 8 carryovers last Friday. I was like, wow, really? I thought we were making good time, too. Silly me.
Oh, we had quite the crowd, too.
Yes, we did. It was wonderful. Every minute of it was wonderful. I loved it. All the different voices talking, and it's like, you know, felt wonderful. It really did. So, I don't know. Should we get this party started? And chatter.
Absolutely.
Oh, and everybody, I added another contest to our 6th annual Halloween week celebration. So we just put up Rex's show for the first day of the Halloween week. So if anybody's interested, check it out. I put it in the room earlier, and I'll be doing that again. And here we go. I'm going to put up the first piece. Normally I get Rex to read, but I have like a bunch of soundbites in this one. So I'm going to start out with Weaver of Dreams. But I'm getting to you, Rex. I'm getting to you.
Oh, that's fine. We got Weaver and the Ocarina's up top as well, so.
Yeah, yeah. We got lots of goodies to listen to. So, okay, I'm going to put up Surrender by Weaver of Dreams. And let me find the button. And I know I have a button. Here we go.
You may be a slimeback, not to be trusted, but that is one gorgeous board, my man. Even better, you know all the moves to ensure that we both have the best time we can. You start off with a kiss, sweet, soft, seductive. Every part of my body wants those lips. I almost swoon with desire, as following those kisses, over my body glides fluttering fingertips. I am gasping for breath, held in your arms, breasts heaving, muscles grasping tight. You tell me not to move, to breathe for a moment, but I am too close to stop tonight.
Great read, Kay. Thank you very much for the soundcraft. It is much appreciated, and it's a good thing you're out to dinner and toasting your vacay at the moment. Otherwise, we'd light you up with some red-faced comments, and we're going to do that anyway. Gray, why don't we start with you?
That was a steamy read, and you know the poem is fast. It's beautiful. It's it really pulls you in. With you may be a slime bag, not to be trusted, but that is one gorgeous bod, my man. Even better, you know, all the moves to ensure that we both have the best time we can. She's pulling you into that appeal, that relationship that she feels with him right off the bat. And then she opens up the second one when you start off with a kiss, a sweet, soft, seductive. Every part of my body wants those lips. You know, when your body cries out for more, for every area to be touched by those lips, that's a powerful and beautiful thing. And then, you know, I like the ending where he wants to put the brakes on, but she's like, no, I'm too close to stop tonight. that was steamy, powerfully engaging.
Great comment. Great. Thank you. Jean, how about you?
Well, I'm telling you, that was just a steamy write from our friend Kate. This wasn't even from a Wednesday, Rex. This is one she just put up for us.
I know.
Ain't she something? She's so devilish, that woman. But what a great piece. It really was very, very steamy, very seductive. And it really draws you in because you're like, oh my, you feel voyeuristic listening to it, and it's like, but you listen a little harder, you don't miss it. Thank you so much for sharing with us. Loved it. Very, very well done. Mm-hmm.
Well, y'all captured the words, so I'm going to capture the voice. Now, y'all both of you were correct on that, but I'm going to go with something a little on the deeper angle because she got into the slime bag and not to be trusted, and then she got to that, but that is one gorgeous bod, my man. There was a little catch in her throat. And then as it progresses, the breathing started to get a little bit more indulgent. She went with the flow of not just the words itself, but actually put the voice into it to make it actually work on that level. And she really hit it off with that last stanza because she slowed down a bit with that thought of, you tell me not to move, to breathe from him, but I'm too close to stop tonight. And it was almost at that moment of delivery, you got that intonation of voice, which sets off the ending to this with a delicious twist. No, not tonight. We're all in.
Nicely
done, Jake.
Yeah, that was definitely awesome. Great audio, and well done, Kate. Thank you so much. That's a birthday present, right? Her gift to us on her birthday. Devil girl. Okay.
You did say she was at the birthday dinner. Is there going to be a birthday afterwards?
Well, we may never know.
Are we taking her tonight and taking someone home?
We may never know, Bex. Nobody tells us everything. Oh, my God. But, yeah, that was good. That was. I feel bad I didn't play it last week now. Jeez. We could have teased her a little more. Okay. The next piece that I have is by Arcana Amore, and this is called The Power of Love. So I think I put it in the room. Yes, I did. I lost the room just that quick. Okay, let me put that one up. So here we go.
Kindling the cradle of a kindred kiss, a radiant dawn shines glowing embers that ride the breeze in sun-drenched bliss to fan the flames of burning desire. This dance is twirled in yearning whispers, spoken with promises of blossoming romance, in softly sung spells of charming enchantments, beside heavenly harmonies from choirs of angels, rejoicing in shimmers of sparkling sincerity, wishes drift gently on columns of clouds, gracefully gliding through sapphire skies to glisten like diamonds among the stars, upon perfumed petals that entwine emotions. Such joy be felt when bathed in passion, sinking into the arms of an endearing embrace, to rise upon wings of ascending euphoria, in fluttering flights of deepening delights that soar on sighs with a feathered caress, weaving silk strands, binding lovers together, joyously singing sweet, soulful serenades, inviting endearment to infatuate the mind, cascading adulation amid showers of flowers, swimming in thoughts of amiable abandon, immersed beneath waves of drowning devotion. Of all the fantasies that float in dreams, one reigns majestically in realms of reality, admired with reverence for its regal splendor, haunting our hearts with the power of love.
Mm-hmm.
Great read, Arcana. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Jane, what do you think?
You know, I thought it was a wonderful piece. Wonderful pen. I love the alliteration as always. Arcana has a wonderful use of alliteration in his work, and his imagery was fabulous. I found it was hard to grab one stanza, so I grabbed two. But I'm not going to read both of them, but I think they were consecutive. Upon perfumed petals that entwine emotions, such joy be felt when bathed in passion, sinking into the arms of an endearing embrace, to rise upon wings of ascending euphoria. You know, beautiful, just beautiful wording, and his audios are always great too. So great job, Arcana, and thank you so much for sharing with us again. Excellent job.
Excellent. Thank you, Jean. And Gray, how about you?
Well, you know, I mean, he's got the ability to do voice acting, you know, I mean, he's got the read down mm-hmm. to a T, but the poem is deeply passionate and engaging. You know, I thought he captured the essence of love beautifully with his varied stanzas and imagery. Just a fascinating poem, beautifully written and read.
Nice.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gray. There was something a little bit more in the voice. There's a deliberate notation to slowing it down just a hair more so the voice and the words can be emblazoned a touch bit more. The picture he's got in here, I'm gathering he picked that first because there's so much of that in here that I thought to kindling the cradle of a kindred kiss to start with kind of walks right out of that picture itself. And the fact that this is quite the piece, and it's delight as well as the alliteration. But those last two stanzas kind of walk on their own, especially that last one. Of all the fantasies that float in dreams, one reigns majestically in realms of reality, admired with reverence for its regal splendor, haunting our hearts with the power of love. So kind of hits on that note of how one is affected and where the mind and body go, and how the flow works within the ecosystem of the body itself. And even when you're not together in that moment, you're floating within that dream, and he cradled that with that last stanza itself. So nicely done, Arcana.
Absolutely. I think that Victoria should really call in. She's put wonderful comments in the room. For this piece, she said the performance of the piece, the background music, it made you feel as if you were being lifted up, which paired beautifully with the topic on how love lifts you up, raises you up. It had almost a haptic feel to it. Just stunning performance. But so Arcana, that was Victoria Frost's comment of your work. So nice comment, Victoria.
There's also a comment that I saw down below by K.H. Ventura. There's no way you can make this up. It's either too good or you are a master of emotional sorcery. I thought that was a clever comment.
Yeah. It's I know what you mean. It's pretty amazing stuff. But absolutely wonderful. Wonderful work. And let me see. Now, Rex, I'm going to come to you on this one. I'm going to put up a piece by Jack Tomkiewicz. And then, don't worry, Gray. I got my eyes set on you for once. Don't you worry.
Pieces by Jack Tomkiewicz. We all walk around, sleepy and slimed, bisected, bifurcated, damaged by dirt, mutilated by mimes, dissected and dental drilled, twisted and tweaked, split railed, dismembered, ripped apart, sliced to bits, looking, searching, groping for that missing jigsaw puzzle piece, the missing part that makes us whole, the last piece in the hardwood floor, the last tile in the mosaic, the last patterned stitch of the quilt, the last tie-off on the throw rug. I found my missing self in you, ocean blue eyes on the earth. End poem. All right, Jean, this is definitely coming to you first.
Oh, I thought this was sweet. I really did. It started out, like, I wasn't sure where he was going. You know, we all walk around sleepy and slimed, bisected and bifurcated, you know, and then it goes on. And all of a sudden he turns it around there, that missing jigsaw puzzle piece. I thought it was great. It had both feet on the floor, and it was a wonderful write. I think that it was sweet. It was really sweet in a realistic kind of way, I guess, you know. Well done, Jack, and I'm sure your wife was delighted. That's such a nice accolade to her. says being married for 49 years is like being part of a matched pair. I didn't know how well matched, but she did. So, you know, just great. Wonderful job, Jack, and thanks for sharing with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jean. And Gray, how about you?
Did a great read on it, Rex. But I like the poem. You know, it's very devoted and loving, you know, but it speaks to how lost we are without our missing piece and, you know, how alone that can be until you find that missing piece that makes you whole, the last piece in the hardwood floor, the last tile in the mosaic, the last pattern stitch of the quilt, the last tie on the throw rug. I found my missing self in you and the bluest ocean blue eyes on earth. Now, that's a beautiful poem dedicated to his wife of 49 years. Beautiful.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gray. And like Jill, I didn't, Jean, I didn't know where this was going because that upper half with the bisected, bifurcated, damaged by dirt, mutilated by mimes, dissected and dental drill, twisted and tweaked, split rail, dismembered, ripped apart, sliced a bit. I didn't know where this was going. It kind of had that notion of a serial killer in that. And then it's on the second half, a searching vision for that missing bit or puzzle piece, the missing part that makes us whole. Then it got into the reality of the separate sides of self from the angle of being young and you don't know that you need that, and then finding it, and even though you still don't know it through some years, by the time you've spent so much time together, you realize this was it all along. So that back end walks that that flavor very well, especially the last piece of hardwood floor, the last tile in the mosaic, the last pattern stitch, and then I found my missing self in you. And those blue eyes, ocean blue eyes, it kind of sparkled something that she knew, but he didn't in the moment, and came to realize over time. So, nicely done, Jack. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay,
the next thing I'm going to put up is I have a song by Budo. We haven't heard him in a while. I don't think he loves us anymore. But I think this was a carryover from Gray's last Wednesday show, wasn't it, Greg?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, Dan Deschino, such a beautiful writing by Jack. The world can be amazingly complicated and messy. The true love brings meaning in the bonds of love, longevity, you define its rival ever, or even quantum entanglement. Nice comment, Dan. Great job. And I put up the piece by Buddha. Now let me hit the button. Me and my buttons. Okay, here we go.
You're the stars in my constellation. Thank you. the snowflake on my dome. I feel young.
The SoundCloud, it is very much appreciated. All right, Gray, you get to kick us off, please.
That was just beautiful. I mean, you know, you could feel the tenderness and the devotion in the poem and the right. You know, the A in my alphabet, girl, you're the Z in my life, too. I need you. You know, she's so much a part of his life. You know, like, she's the Alpha and Omega, his lifeline, his glue. I want you. And, you know, it's just beautiful, chock to block with love and devotion.
Excellent. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
And Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, I've kind of missed Buddha giving us songs each week. I got spoiled by that for so long. I thought that this was a great piece. I loved each verse. Pluck one, and I went, you know, no, because I like that one too. And I like, well, yeah, I like that one too. And I really enjoyed his chorus on the piece. It was well done as always. And yeah, and as always, he's got a great audio to go along with his work. So excellent stuff. I kind of liked, you're the A in my alphabet, the Z in my life too. I need you. You know, you're the rain in my summer garden. You're the snowflake on my tongue. I feel young when I'm with you. I thought that was sweet. But I don't know, it just had a real down-to-earth feel about it, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. So thank you, Buddha, for sharing. Excellent job.
Thank you, Gene. I remember this from a year ago. It was I thought it had such a nice touch of Paul McCartney from back in the day when he and Linda were married, and it still rings on that note and has a flavor of Maybe I'm Amazed from that song itself, that sort of what sticks in the mind and you still can't believe it yet. You live within it because you know it's right. Very nicely done, Buddha, and thank you very much. Well, Gene, we're back on you.
Okay, and I told you I was coming your way, Gray. I have the next one for you by C.L. Howard.
So, okie dokie. Sorry, I'm just refreshing. Okay.
No problem.
All right, this is called Love Blooms by C.L. Howard. There are things I know of flowers, how they grow within the mud. and that in fullness of time's pleasure, they will journey beyond the bud. You, my dear, sweet floret, I've observed from seed to send, through your spring time rains and summer strains, all the seasons filled with wind. I've watched as weeds surround you, full of insects that sought you harm. They choked and chewed your ego, but you survived their charm. Now here I sit at winter's end to welcome springtime's warm, who shines on inflorescence and gently heals her form. And as you lift your golden head, tears upon your gloom, time and fullness dries them all, bringing love to bloom. End poem.
Great. And read, author, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In his author's notes, he says, "For my daughter and the man whom she loves, you were and are a blessing as well as a comfort to her. May your marriage be blessed by Yahweh, and may your marriage be a blessing to him. Love, Dad." So that's beautiful.
Excellent.
Absolutely. Dean, what do you think?
This is a beautiful piece. And you can kind of feel the love in it as you're reading it. I wasn't sure. The author's note kind of summed it up, what I guess the reasoning behind it. Not that we need that, but it was just wonderful. Greg, you did a great job reading it. Now here I sit at winter's end to welcome springtime's warm, who shines on inflorescence and gently heals her form. And as you lift your golden head, tears upon your gloom, time and fullness dries them all, bringing love to bloom. I look at that and I wonder if, because there's so many ways I guess you could interpret it. And I think that when we get older and our children marry, we feel like we're kind of getting at the far end of the spectrum. And, you're watching love bloom and blossom again in your children. And I think that's kind of the way I took it. That doesn't mean that's how he meant it exactly. But I thought that's kind of what I got from it after the author's notes, because it made perfect sense. But beautiful, beautiful work, C.L. Howard, and I'm sure your daughter was delighted to see this. And if she didn't see it, I think that you should make sure she does. Wonderful job. Thanks for sharing.
Nice, Gene. Yeah, it's that note to the passing of the torch, so to speak. The next generation living life on their terms. And as he puts, because he did this well. There are things I know of flowers, how they grow within the mud, and that in the fullness of time's pleasure, they will journey beyond the bud. That note to from the seed to the full-grown woman at the bottom end of it. But also, my dear sweet floret, I've observed the seed descend through springtime rains and summer strains, all the seasons filled with wind. Notes to childhood and the things that kids get into, how the weeds, so to speak, those little jitterbugs that kind of tug, pull, and bite you in the meantime as you grow up. So he walks the notes from beginning to end, from the bulb, so to speak, right to the handoff, and that passing of one generation into the next, and waiting for that third generation to emerge. So nicely done there, CL. Thank you. And Gray, you got to read it. How about you?
I thought it was a tender, loving, devotional poem written to in tribute to his daughter's marriage, and how beautiful that is in his life and to the Creator as well. So it's a fantastic poem. Pleasure to read.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody. All right, Gene, we're back on you.
Wow.
Dark pile on the rabbit. Dark pile on the rabbit.
Let me see now. The next piece I'm going to put up, I'm going to read. And then I'm coming back to Rex. So here we go. This is called Dead Like Me by Darkened Auras. It is October. Dead Like Me. A spider on my cheek to symbolize the 8 creepy stages of my demise. When they look at me, do you think they see my dead inside, solemn stare of apathy? I did not nor would I choose this life, too young to be a barren wife. I never experienced a childhood. carved the date I died deep in the wood. Tears of innocence watered the tree, wishing and praying to be set free. I hear them coming to take me away, so they can force me to my wedding day. My milky fresh and perfect skin disguises the putrid rot within. They'll transfix upon my hypnotic eyes, windows to my soul reflecting lies. Look beyond this mortal coil. Take off your tin hat, made of foil. If you look close, perhaps you'll see that you're, in fact, dead like me. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Gray, why don't we start with you, please?
Beautiful read, Phil. But, you know, that first stanza really pulls you in. A spider on my cheek to symbolize the 8 creepy stages of my demise. When they look at me, do you think they see my dead inside? Solemn stare of empathy. You know, like that just hooks you right there. And then, you know, the whole right just keeps you tied in until the very penultimate stanza where it says, look beyond this mortal coil, take off your tin hat made of foil. If you look close, perhaps you'll see that you are, in fact, dead like me. You know, we're all living dead, torn apart by our lives. But it was a fascinating, right? Beautifully read, Bill.
Absolutely. Thank you, Greg. All right, Jean, you got to read it. What about you?
I say, well, it kind of creepy, but wonderfully so. You know, it was fabulously dark and so well done. I liked each stanza very much. You know, I was like, okay, and I'm like, yeah, and I like that. As I was reading it, I'm going, yeah, and I like that. Wait, and then I read the next one, I go, yeah, I like that too, you know. But I did not, nor would I choose this life, too young to be a barren wife. I never experienced a childhood, carved the date I died deep in the wood. Just, it like, leaves all these questions in your mind as you go through it. I mean, it answers questions, but it leaves questions, and it kind of leaves you with that thinking about it kind of, I don't know, it's a thinking about it kind of right. You know, just because you finish reading it doesn't mean that you've put it all in, like, absolute perspective. I don't think, anyway. But nicely done, you know, Dark and Auras, and I think you did a great job with it. And what a wonderful image. What a wonderful image. So, yep. Excellent. Yeah.
That picture is haunting, and it's a retrospective of the light and the dark displayed, the beauty and the ugliness that walks within. I too thought that opening stanza was a nice kickoff, because it generates a number of thoughts that you can walk into, but that second stanza, the one that you just read, Jean, kind of hits off the tone and symbolism that walks within the piece itself. I think the thought of carved the date I died deep in the wood is a double entendre thought within that, and the tears of innocence water the tree, also a notation to what has happened. And then the force, take her away, so they force her to a wedding day. And then again, my milky fresh and perfect skin disguises the putrid rot within. That also walks back into the darkness of something terrible that arose, and that those who never experienced a childhood also offers up a candid flavor of something dark and devious. And the back end of this, I guess, would be the thought of her husband. Look beyond this mortal coil, take off your tin hat made of foil. If you look close, perhaps you'll see that you're in fact dead like me.
Yeah.
So it has a particular dark flavor to it with serious connotations to reality of what happened. And it's dark.
Yeah.
And it's beautifully written.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. I have to agree with that.
Thank you,
Dean.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Rex, the next one I have is for you. So I'm going to put it up. It's called Black Orchid, and it's by Cedar Chapman.
All right. Black Orchid by Black Orchid by Cedar Chapman. I gaze into your dark pupils. My reflection stares back at me, a shadow of a woman barely resembling, with $200 face cream and needle pricks around her eyes, pretending, offending. I see how you talk to her, waiting, yearning for my youngest self to walk through your door, but she's gone now. Where is the young bloke who used to stand by her side, who once recklessly cracked a beer bottle on some poor fellow's head because he offered her a drink and asked if she liked a Lord Huron song? Where is that bloke gone? JPEGs pixelating in colors lost of midsummer rides on your bike, wearing nothing but black leather, smothered in cheap whiskey, parked by our private sycamore tree, smoking with Mary Jane and a bag full of quarter pounders. We made lustful love under the blood moon as each speckled silver star stared down on us, judging, envying. Black and white moments to be brushed into the wind, the lint on your three-piece Tom Ford suit. I lied. You lied. We both tried. A black orchid's bloom, only once a century on a perfect wintry day. We were blessed to have smelled it. Its petals lost. Its fragrance gone. Forever is come. Forever is gone. And Paul. And Jean, we're coming to you.
What an interesting write. I'm not familiar with. Well, it looks like a song. I lied. I'm not familiar with it, so I don't want to pretend on that. But without that being any part of it, I think it was wonderfully written, and I think that there's wonderful imagery throughout. You know, between the I had to say, you know, shadow of a woman barely resembling, with $200 face cream and needle pricks around her eyes, pretending, offending. I see how you talk to her, waiting, yearning for my younger self to walk through your door, but she's gone now. It was just this wonderful stage set, you know, leading into what this one is, what this fellow is looking for, and it's just not going to happen kind of thing, and you know, that we're past that. You know, we're just past that. And, you know, when you get down to the bottom, the black and white moments to be brushed into the wind like lint on your three-piece Tom Ford suit. I lied, you lied, we both tried. Wonderful. Just, I don't know, I love the way this was written, and I think it was skillful in the way it was presented to everyone. So excellent job, and thank you, Cedar, because it was a great piece. So thanks for sharing.
Nice. Here, I got a point of reference for you. It's the song I Lied by Lord Huron. I swore that I'd become a better man for you, and I tried to change my ways and walk the line you follow. I bore a flame that burned 1,000 suns for you, but it died. Told you I could never love somebody else, but I lied. I lied. That's the reference. There's the reference point of the song. So that was a nice touch there, running in the fact that they both went that sort of, even though they spent the time together, and that thought of the black orchid, the only blooms once a century, and they both got to smell it in that time. It was as if that black orchid represents both their youth and the path that they would eventually be married to later in life as that darkened arena opens up. Yeah, he lies, she lies. They both tried, but in the end, everything died. So a nice touch off the song itself. And Gray, how about you?
You know, she did a beautiful take on the prompt. I really enjoyed her version of the write, and congratulations on her gold in that contest. But, I mean, you know, I really enjoyed the whole poem. It was very artistic and imaginative with its presentation, and its flow was fantastic as well. So just a beautiful write and an excellent read as well.
Wonderful. Thank you, Gray. And Eugene, we're coming to you.
Oh, Eugene. No, Eugene has an axe. We're going to leave him out of it.
Well, how about Eugenia then?
No. No. I draw the line at that one. Oh, my God. Okay. Yes, I have the next one to put up, my poetic Picasso. I don't know where he's at, but he's going to miss his own work tonight. So let me hit the button on that one. This is, there it is, called Creepy Camille. This should be good. There you go.
Within the Appalachian Mountains, beyond the mines of cobalt moonstones, is a haunting mystery enveloped by the pathway of engraved footprints. It is said by the local people of the area, a terrifying specter roams the woodlands, of a gripping appearance that speaks those who dare to enter the darkness of hell below the twilight. Where the daffodils once blossomed, the strong breeze brushes the nectar. She walks upon the crockery leaves barefoot, dressed in garments drenched in crimson blood from the pallor of her death. Buried in a hidden unknown tomb, composed of the rot soil of the earth, lies a vibrated body, desecrated subtly by the cold memory of a bloody murder. She lurks amongst the shuttles. If you enter these isolated woods, do with an absolute discretion possible, but know that you do with the utmost peril, for you run the risk of meeting Creepy Camille.
Goodness gracious.
Great read, Frank. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. And Gray, why don't we kick it with you, please?
Yeah, I enjoyed the read. It was very creepy. Engaging throughout, though. I mean, you know, he pulls you into the scene and holds you right until the very end. And, you know, he's a talented writer, and it really shines through in this poem as well. She lurks among shadows. If you enter these isolated woods, do so with absolute discretion possible. But know that you do with the utmost peril, for you run the risk of meeting Creepy Camille. Very, very haunting poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Gray. And Jean.
I thought this was great. There's so much going on. I thought there was wonderful imagery throughout. And it was, I'm looking to like play one segment. Buried in a hidden unknown tomb, composed of the rot soil of the earth, lies her violated body, desecrated sadly by the cold memory of her bloody murder. You know, that goes on the last stanza. It was wonderful as well. Just really nicely penned, Frank. I thought it was just, you know, well done, great imagery throughout, and it was creepy indeed. And, I thought the audio was great. So, so I want to thank you for sharing with us, Frank. That was good done. Good job.
Thank you, Jane. It's the tone and timbre of this tale that I like, the right venue, Appalachian Mountains beyond the mines of cobalt stones. Nicely open stanza. Then opened up the second one with, "'Tis said by the local people of the area, a terrifying specter roams the woodlands with a gripping appearance of spooks." Again, that tempo of voice for the arena drawn on. Again, that thought to something deep, dark, mysterious in the Appalachian Mountains. And that even offers up a touch of beauty where the daffodils once blossomed. The strong breeze brushes the nectar as she walks upon crackling leaves of barefoot. Now, the idea of that risen image, and then that fourth stanza hits on the notion of why. The fact that she was violated and bloody murdered, desecrated, and just given a cursory burial, so to speak. Now she rises to love the woods in search of the one or those that did her badly. And yet, since she has not, since she still walks, she cannot rest because, and that is the thought of having such an entity abound in such an atmosphere. Nicely done, Frank.
Excellent.
Well, Jean, we're coming to you.
Okay, well, Gray, I'm coming back to you. I have a piece here by Mike Britland. It's called I Am Yours.
Okay. I Am Yours by Mike Britland. Observing her on the pale wood chair, reading a book while toying with her hair, overlooking nature's lush green trees underneath the vivid sky blue seas. Looking back, she smiled at me with affection as I could see the tender, warm connection. I walked over towards her eternal bliss, leaning in, giving me a heartfelt kiss. Saying to her, the stars had the brightness of your eyes. I would spend sleepless nights admiring the elegant skies. My heart's a drum and it beats for you. Melting away, her cheeks were a rosy red hue. In that moment, sparkling in the sunset, our auras danced together as one silhouette. I am yours forever, so make me your king. Lay me your hand and take this diamond ring. And boom.
Great read, great. Thank you very much. That last stanza is a little bit of a twist because those first three kind of hint at the ease and notion of comfort, like they've been together for years, and there's such a nice expression of heartfelt love and permanence there. But that last stanza throws a little bit of a twist in the moment with the idea, hey, now it's time to make me your king. Take my hand and I offer this ring. So I wasn't expecting that. Nicely done on that, Mike. Thank you. Jean, how about you?
Yeah, I thought it was a sweet piece. You know, observing her on a pale wood chair, reading a book while toying her hair, overlooking nature's lush green trees underneath the vivid sky blue seas. Wonderful rhyme in it. I think that he kind of leads you up to that point, you know, where he offers that ring. I think that it's just a lovely, the stage was set nicely throughout the poem. And I think that it all came to fruition in that last stanza. And I think it was well done.
Thank you, Jean. And Gray, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I loved it. It's, it had such a tender, loving, devotional feel to it. You could really feel his warmth for her, and I thought it was just beautiful, you know, especially that final stanza. In that moment, sparkling in the sunset, our auras dance together as one silhouette. I am yours forever, so make me your king. Lay me your hand and take this diamond ring. I mean, he's offering her forever, and, you know, it seems like he'd be a fool not to take it. So, a beautiful poem.
Damn it, Frank, you're eating burgers? Ship some this way.
Right?
Yeah, you're making us hungry, damn it. That ain't right. Thank you, Greg.
That's right.
All right, Dean, we're coming back to you.
Oh, God, he hit Whataburger. That's one of my favorites. God. When I lived in Florida, I loved Whataburger. Anyway, that is cool. The next piece I'm going to put up is by Stelina, and this is called The Mystical Lewis Wayne Cat. And I have an audio for this one. So here we go.
Louis understood the mystical world of cats, the one which mere mortals fail to perceive, where each of us don dapper hats and spats, in which the feline facade they preconceive. He knew we were formidable, we feline figures, to enter anthropoid realms and speak with flair, that our sentient psyches held the power to transfigure, and that we all possess a certain savoir-faire. He spoke to us in language only we could understand, and painted our exploits in our sequestered sense. We welcomed him as akin to us within our magic land, for he possessed a true rapport and empathy immense. For him, our wondrous world was an Elysian escape from the everyday delusions of a twisted reality, a place wherein all elements had their own unique shape, and each of us became a metaphysical entity.
Great read, Stelina. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Gene, we're coming to you.
That wasn't fair. I was typing. But I thought
I didn't
say nothing. I know. It was fabulous. I loved her choice of music for behind in this. I thought that it went so well with her read. And I love the tale she told. Wonderful, wonderful job, Stelina. It was four stanzas long, and it felt like there was so much more to it. You know, I don't know if maybe that was just me. You know, that's been said before. But it just, it wasn't that it was like, it didn't sound overly long. It just had substance, you know, when she read it. And I think that it was just really nicely done. I love the imagery. I love the pictures she used on the prompt for prompts or for just display. But I think it was just a great job and really enjoyable. Wonderful job, Stelina. Thanks for sharing that. That was great. Absolutely.
Thank you, Gene. And Gray, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I was reading a bit in the comment section, and it speaks of the artist being having a tormented life, and this was his escape. Is what I'm getting out of it. So, but you know, like, you know, cats are fascinating. They are very smart and they are mystical. And you know, when you look at them with a twisted mind, I'm sure that you can see many things. And he painted what he saw and ended up with beautiful art. So, a fantastic tribute to cats and the artist.
Excellent. Thank you, Gray. And yeah, I mean, it did have a troubled life, but I think you can look at the picture. I mean, that opening picture with the cat with the glasses, a pen and a piece of paper, and then that one with the rickshaw. There is you take the cats themselves, they all have their own personalities, and even though they don't actually need us until they want us, and they treat us like we're the pet. So there is that notion of bringing life to those antics and the consequentiality of the cat itself, offering up that one with the glasses on and the pen and paper, does kind of hit on that note. Yeah, you could look at a cat that way and see the notations of something deeper behind the face itself. And that one second picture she used as the backdrop for her voice, that was that kind of hits on the muse of playfulness, because you've got one pulling another one in a rickshaw and another one kind of smiling on the offside. So there is that notion of, yeah, there is a playful angle, there's a serious angle, and they probably did a whole lot more bringing in cats because they spoke to him in a manner that most people don't see. So nicely done, Stelina. Thank you.
Right.
Okay,
and just so you know, Rex, that second image on that poem, if you click that, because I had to mute it and then click it, that's a whole series
right.
of artwork by Wayne, the Francis.
Oh, okay,
I think it was
sure.
Francis. And it's just all different cat images, so it kind of added to it as well.
Plus there was a kind of a tone to Alice in Wonderland feel, stepping into another reality.
Absolutely. Our next piece is by Robert M., and it's called Communication. And I have an audio for this. Okay, here we go.
This is my recital of Communication, a poem inspired by the song Schism. Expectations pivot between misconception and ineptitude. Spiraling desires hold fast a tenuous web woven in guilt and shame. Trust acts as more of a painful lubricant than miraculous cohesion. Resentment teems as the brink of patience is met with volatile toxicity. Your eyes like razor blades dismantling the foundation of my boundaries with great precision, yet your tongue is sharper still. Communication would seemingly be that long-lost nepenthe that could cleanse all of the toxic malignancy that ails us, but myths cannot help to sate the dysfunction of our reality. I need to know, you need to lie. I need some space and you need to cry. I need to sleep, you need to talk. I need to leave, you need to fuck. Seems the only thing that held this chaotic circus together was orgasms and bad decisions, but I am over it. Communication has never been our strongest suit, so let me make it clear, my dear. Leave me the fuck alone.
Great read, Robert. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. Gene, start with you, please.
Robert said a bad word. I went, oh my goodness. I'm not mad at you, Robert. Don't take it that way. It just was like, holy moly.
We are 11, so we're more akin to the witching hour at the moment.
It's all good. Yeah, it's after 11. I don't care. I really don't care anyway, because it's not like he just kept saying it over and over and over again. It wasn't all about that. It was used for emphasis, and I got it. I think that this was a well-done take on that prompt. I'm somewhat familiar with the song. I've heard it a couple times, and I think that he really... I think he nailed it. He really did. And I think that this was a very expressive piece. He says here, you know, in his tags, he says, sad sex, relationship, resentment, and adult. He nailed the resentment throughout this piece. I mean, there were no doubt about it, no questions about it. It was obvious. And it was very well stated. And I think it was just really well expressed. So great job, Robert, and thanks for sharing this one with us. It was really well done. You know, he did it almost a year ago. Yeah, thank you.
And Gray, how about you?
You know, with his read, it really makes the write pretty haunting. You know, it's this powerful relationship that's failing, and as it's going down and spiraling out of control, you know, they're... to the point where he says, communication has never been our strongest suit, so let me make it clear, my dear. Leave me the F alone. Yeah, powerful poem. In
absolutely.
Your face, pretty.
Yes, it is. And there is that note. It is by a song, Schism by Tool. But there's also a note of some serious thought to tainted love in this. The fact that they're together more on the idea of needs rather than love itself. I need to know, you need to lie. I need to space, you need to cry. I need to sleep, you need to talk. I need to leave, you need to fuck. So that there is that notion, especially with the thought on that next stanza, orgasms and bad decisions. If there's nothing else holding them in place except that. That tension and fury in the passion, and the passion comes out even harder with eyes like razor blades, yet your tongue is sharper still. So there's some hard notes to how almost one-sided it seems, because especially with the thought of the razor blades, and yet the tongue is an even sharper instrument of defecance, something to take one down the size. So it's definitely a note to it is need in the moment, and that's powerful, but everything else kind of outweighs the ease of that need. And the idea of leaving me the fact alone is definitely, that kind of toxicity. You either hang out and get destroyed, or you walk away and learn to live. Nicely done, Robert. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okie doke. I'm going to read the next one. I'm going to try and pronounce the next one. This one is by Kiku, and it's called Hypnagogia. I don't know if that's correct or wrong, but I'll take a chance on that one. So here we go. Suppose the rain is not sadness, that it is the natural succession to a long drought, too eager to reach for the umbrella. Perhaps the sunset is not the final crease of day, but the night will continue to unfold from itself, an unfinished poem addressed to restless dawns. Tonight, I sit with my piano and you talk. It tells me it understands me, urges me to speak, thoughts tangled in its coiled copper strings. I play an excerpt from the Nocturna from an old Suzuki book, sweet music wedged in between eclectic vinyl records. Its voice escapes like a thin whisper at my sleight of hand. The second F key sticks silently and improv. Call it our musical interpretation, and suddenly it all makes sense. End the poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Gray, why don't we start with you, please?
Sorry, I just going into her author's notes a little bit. It says in her first stanza, it says, many nights it was just me and my piano, and we learned a lot from each other. We are both getting older and broken in ways, but together the pieces fit seamlessly. When I can find the words, I reach to poetry. When I cannot, my piano awaits me. So, yeah, just a beautiful poem on the subject of how much life an instrument can bring to you, and you bring to it, and the time that you share together, giving your gift to the world. I thought it was just beautiful.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Jean, how about you? You got to read it.
I did. I thought it was a great, I want to say brevity. It's not very long. But I think it kind of draws you in almost an enchanting kind of way. It kind of, you start reading it, and it does. It just pulls you in and has you, like, just, I don't know, becoming part of it in a way. I don't know how to express it, because you almost hear that sound of the keys sticking and the piano keys. And maybe I'm just crazy, but I that's what I got from it. It really pulled me in like that, and I thought it was very, very well done, and it was an enjoyable piece. So wonderful job, Kiko, and thank you so much for sharing this one with us. I enjoyed it very much.
Excellent. Well, the title is Hypnagogia, that transitional state between wakefulness and sleep. So there is that note to take on as well. And that thought, suppose rain is not sadness, that is a natural succession to a long drought. So there kind of walks in there too, too eager to reach for an umbrella. Perhaps the sunset is not the final crease of day. So there's sort of a notation of the transition itself between day and evening, plus the thought between that wakefulness and sleep. But I like that thought, an unfinished poem addressed to restless dawns. And tonight I sit with my piano. Is that notation of hitting the piano, so to speak, when the words don't fold. And then when the words do fold, the piano is the side thing that one goes to as a notation of release. Because you had some of that sweet music wasted between eclectic vinyl records. His voice escapes like a thin whisper at my sleight of hand. Now, I like that thought of the F key sticks silently, there's that note to the piano being aged and maybe needs a little work. But it also kind of hits on the notation of self and that key sticking, as she puts it, an improv, call it out, musical interpretation, and suddenly it all makes sense because in that moment you hit something which was a key moment. Yes, it sparked the mind in the moment. So it reverses itself back again to that unfinished poem. But also the idea that the mind has woken up in that moment so that you can express the finish to that piece itself. So nicely done, Kiko.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jane, we're back on you.
Okie dokie. Well, that's going to bring me to the next piece by Naomi Sarah. Normally Naomi calls in by now, so I'm assuming that she is not tonight. So let me find it. Well, maybe I'll change it up and I'll do another piece right now. Okay. Never mind. Put that one on hold. I'm going to put a piece up by Diane D. And let me do that. And I'll take care of that audio. Don't you worry. Here we go. And let me hit that button because I know I have that one. And here we go.
When the Street Lights Go Out by Diane D. 'Twas a gray day with a sprinkle of silver, like a ship at half mast, just sitting there. The skies brazenly scattered snowflakes, plunging thick and burly, iced hexagons, feathery, settling on my lingering tongue, blotting the fur cuffs of my red snowsuit. The smell of winter, pine, fume, and wood chipped my rosy cheeks into an ice glaze. In a town of 500, including cats and dogs, winter stomps in on rawhide snowshoes, etching the snow into snowbank benches where we would sit to lace up our skates. We showed in droves at the local ice rink, lugging snow shovels and hockey sticks, sharpened ice skates flung over the blade. The arena, 20 to 40 kids started shoveling at one time. Within minutes, that blade of ice glistened. We would play shovel all day. Going home when the street lights go out. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you for the sound cloud. It is very much appreciated. And Gray, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, beautiful read on that, Diane. And, you know, the poem's powerful. It's engaging. You know, it takes you back in this moment of time to this place where it was winter. And, you know, she gathered with her friends in a town of 500, including cats and dogs. And then winter stomps on rawhide shoes, etching the snow into snowbank benches where we would sit to lace up our skates. And then, you know, 20 to 40 kids started shoveling at a time. Within minutes, that blade of ice glistened. We would play, shovel all day. Going home when the street lights go out, you know, bringing it to the close to the title and tying it all together. So just a beautiful poem.
Absolutely. Thank you, Graham. Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was a great piece by Diane. Wonderful imagery, and the story was so well told. I love how she went on. You know, we showed in droves at the local ice rink, lugging snow shovels and hockey sticks, sharpened ice skates flung over the blade. The arena, a perfectly shaped snow pillow. 20 to 40 kids started shoveling it at a time. Within minutes, that blade of ice glistened. We would play, shovel all day, going home when the streetlights go out. That in itself takes you back to a different time, you know, when the streetlights go out. God, you know, we don't have streetlights anymore around here. I don't know how the other areas are, but it takes me somewhere different to an older day. And I thought it was just really, really well done. So great work, Diane, and thank you for sharing this with us. It's got a little bit of a nostalgia floating around in it, and a wonderful story. Thanks.
Absolutely, and I think that was definitely the motif, that middle stanza. In a town of 500, including cats and dogs, winter stomps in on rawhide snowshoes, etched in the snow in the snowbank benches, where we'd sit till legs up our skates. Now, you think a touch of humor, a town of 500, including cats and dogs, that's quite a bit right there. But also the thought of the last stand for the 20 to 40 kids hits on that note of a day when the kids actually did, when it was winter days like this, and you were out of school, or summer days on another level, you were out from the when you got up in the morning, you had breakfast, you were out the door until supper time when the lights go out, always, every single day, because you didn't want to be cooped up in the house. Unlike today, where everything's been so easy, the kids spend more time in front of the computer or on their phones playing games instead of actually going out to enjoy the games with camaraderie of 20 to 40 kids, actually getting together to scoop out this place so they could skate and have that hockey game skate the rink and enjoy the moment in time. Steve, we've kind of lost that edge of what it means to be a kid doing this kind of stuff. And that's a sad notation.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okie dokie. Well, now I'm ready to play Naomi. You know, I'm a little slow. I think I didn't see an audio on there earlier, but I guess my eyes were playing tricks on me. So here we go. Let me put this up. And I hit the button. Excellent work. And Diane very well deserves front page tip on that. Great job. So here we go.
Summer heat. Running towards you, it's climbing a dune. My bronchi filling with sea air, discovering there the blue mirror with wrinkles crested with foam and its dazzling silver, looking into your eyes like staring into the vast horizon and being torn apart by the sudden cry of a seagull. The taste and scent of your body, my tongue savoring the grains of salt on my moist lips as my feet sink into the warmth of the sand. The verses you whisper to me under the stars of summer, like getting drunk on fireworks to the point of hallucination.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And, Jean, why don't we kick it with you first, please?
Well, why not? I thought this was a beautiful piece by Naomi. Just a great imagery, and it's that summer heat. She's, you know, she's talking, it's like a double 100, you know, you get the summer heat and the ocean and the sand, and she just—it's so enticing, just beautifully written and very well expressed. I think that she's got it all going different directions. Looking into your eyes, like staring into the vast horizon, and being torn apart by the sudden cry of the seagull. It's like a daydream, but not a daydream. And it goes on. And I love how she did it. She's very masterful at the type of the light. And yes, and it was just wonderful. Beautifully done.
And Gray, how about you?
She did a beautiful read on her poem. But, you know, her poem is so loving and endearing throughout. You can picture all this running towards you. It's climbing a dune, my bronchia filled with sea air, discovering there the blue mirror with wrinkles crested with foam, and it's dazzling silver. I mean, she paints such a beautiful picture right there. And then looking into your eyes, like staring into the vast horizon, and being torn apart by the sudden cry of a seagull. You know, when you get so lost in somebody that a seagull's cry shocks you. And then, you know, so you got sight and taste is coming up. You know, the taste and scent of your body. My tongue's savoring the grains of salt on my moist lips as my feet sink into the warmth of your sand, of the sand. And then, you know, and then you're so drunk and high on this person that you're intoxicated by this person, which is a fascinating and powerful thing. So just a beautiful poem.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Yeah, there's such a great touch of warmth within this, the running toward up a sand dune, bronchia filling with sea air, the vast horizon, the taste, the sensations, the salt, moist lips, warmth of the sand. It offers up that motif in the moment of being alone with this other person who means so much to you on a desert island by yourselves. And that last thought would be, I like that, the last couple of lines, like getting drunk on fireworks to the point of hallucination. That opens up a whole new meaning to the burst of illuming within the minds at that moment. Nicely done, Naomi. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okie dokie. Well, the next one I'm going to put up is by A.R. Mundell, Made Light. And I have an audio for this one as well. So let me hit that button. I have tons of buttons.
Dark Made Light. Insecurity shared as living scared that we are all alone. Dark being in the dark has left its mark, or by the touch of phone. Comparing shadows which spiral and pitch from palm to palm and home. With each new pass, the dark gets light and dark is banished to the night, as black clothes roll from tongue and soul, transforming us to roam. With freedom's lease, we find release with kind and gentle tone, to hone our hearts to light a path from running stars, from that which we are prone. End poem.
Great read, AR. Thank you for the sound out. It is very much appreciated. Great. Why don't we start with you, please?
Sure, I'm going to start with our author's notes. A poem I wrote after a conversation with my friend where we both admitted we'd been depressed. So, you know, that really adds an extra note to the poem. You know, like, it really starts out with their conversation. Insecurity shared of living scared that we were all alone. Dark being in the dark has left its mark all by the touch of the phone. Comparing shadows which spiral and pitch from palm to palm and then home, you know, black words roll from tongue and soul, transforming as they roam. You know, dark thoughts bring darkness into our lives and darkness into our hearts. And then to find somebody to share that darkness with helps bring in the light for the both of you. So it ends with our hearts to lighter parts for running starts from that which we are prone. A wonderful poem on the subject of depression and coming out of it. So beautifully done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gray. And Jean, what about you?
Well, you know, I have to agree with Gray. I mean, what I started to write was, you know, nothing more lifting than knowing we are not alone. You know, when you're depressed and you feel like you're it's just you. You know, it's just you against the world, and to find that someone that you know and respect and or care about, however way you want to word that, is in the same boat as you, there's hope because you're not alone, and you have someone you can talk to about it and someone that understands. It makes a world of difference, and I think that this was just it was well done, and I like the fact that she. Even though, you know, depression is heavy and it's one of those things that, you know, people who have it is something hard to deal with. The poem itself is light. And I think that it's written in a hopeful kind of fashion. And I guess that's the light from the dark, in a way. because even though it speaks of a serious issue and you know, finding someone else that understands, it has a light quality to the wording and the way it's put together. And I like that, and I think it was very well done in that respect. So thank you so much for sharing, A.R. Mundell, and thanks for the sound clip. Appreciate it.
Excellent. I may be wrong, but I'm going to drop something. This kind of has a PTSD feel to it, that notation when the world got shut down. Nobody knew the detrimental melee that would ensue from that declining note of personal contact, the note to touching, feeling, the closeness of other people when you're told, don't go near nobody, stay in your house, you can't have nobody over, and everything that went along with it. In the moment, it all seemed kind of right, all the right thing to do, but nobody took any thought to the reality of what would occur by locking people down for a year to the point where there is no contact, there are no smiles, there is no communication. And this kind of walks on that note of everybody's stressed in the moment trying to do this, that, and the other thing, but this kind of hits on that idea of post-traumatic stress syndrome afterwards, when it's finally done, and now you get to offer up some semblance of life again, then the reality of what happened sinks in because you're a little bit more relaxed, and that that tone of depression sits in, and that's what I get out of this. So the back end walks that note of finally finding another individual to spend a bit of time with that kind of alleviates both the tensions they've been feeling. So nicely done, AR. Thank you. All right, Jean, where have I gone? You.
Let me see now. I'm trying to figure out how to juggle these. Victoria Frost, you better call in your piece that's coming up. Just saying.
Well,
just
she
saying,
said
guys.
She's trying.
That's good. That's good. That's good. That was my nudge. Okay. Gray, I'm going to ask you to read this piece by Mamia. So here we go.
Okay, yeah, she just appeared in the group. So perfect timing, Mamia.
Yeah.
Okay, so this poem is called Winter in the Tropics by Mamia. My heart is winter ice, burning in the dark. I hear your laughter and wish it was for me. Your embrace is cold, your caresses even more so. Still, I welcome them. My longing is the death of me. Your scent on my skin reminds me of the days when you were the sun, filling me with heat. But this extended eclipse has gone on forever, and I cower alone, even when we sleep together. End poem.
Great read, great. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, where you want to go with this?
You know, I thought that this was really well done by Christine. You know, my heart is winter ice burning in the dark. I hear your laughter and wish it was for me. It's a sad piece. And, you know, winter in the tropics, you know, you look at that and it's like you have this wonderful at one time, wonderful relationship, and you feel the chill come over it. And that's kind of where I took the gist of this poem. And I think that it was just well expressed. Christine has a great way of wording her poetry, and it's always well done. You know, the intro stanza, I liked all the stanzas. But the outro, but this extended eclipse has gone on forever, and I cower alone, even when we sleep together. The sad state of affairs there, you know, you just can't escape that chill or the coldness that follows in this thought. So wonderful work, Christine, and thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It is cold. The winter ice for the heart. Your embrace is cold. My longing is the death of me. And your caress is even more so when it comes to the cold. The extended eclipse also hits on that note of cold has gone on forever. And even when we sleep together, there's such a cold note in that line there. But that third stanza offers up a little bit of contrast. Your scent on my skin reminds me of those days when you were the sun filling me with heat. But everything else is offered up. It's a blight. It's barren. It's the tundra, so to speak. Heck, there isn't even any nose rubbing in this to actually offer up a sense of something between them. It's just dark and abysmal. And well done there, Matthew. Thank you. You got to read it, Gray. How about you?
Yeah, you know, it was dark and painful. You know, when the love is lost, it's really hard on a person. It feels like winter, you know, coming into your tropics and tearing everything up and ripping it apart. You know, and when you're sleeping alone, even though you're together, that's a dark place to be as well. Very lonely. So, a very tragic poem. Beautifully written, though.
Excellent. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay. Give me 2 seconds. I can't type fast enough, man. I can't type fast enough. You guys talk too fast for me. Okay, let me see now. The next piece I'm going to put up is for you, Rex. I'm going to put up a piece by BJGS.
All right.
My pride.
My pride by DJGS117. The cold on your face countertop conveys mind going between things like your legs in a dream state. Feel my kneading through it, turning head, please. You know it's right, scrying into the night. I'm only here because of your stride. My heart bleeds for thee. I crave you always. I stay watching hallways. I want you to shine bright. At the same time, your want, a sunrise, encumbered our throats prying. No need to breathe. Deny if you will, but you won't. Not a drill. I am yours. You are mine. This time, former ceases. At least, yet. Us is scattered, outclassed rapture, breathtaking atmosphere, asking more, wanting what's in store, no more releasing control. Oh, more, you know you belong to my winds, beautiful sin, but worship my govern. You know, also, the book will flip script, reach the line, finished. Unleash you and me, rabid curs, sleeping tigers, responding, no one unnerved, a zoo with no preserves, now the lion himself, beside, processing his pride, yours. And Paul, and Jane, we're going to start with you.
No, you're not. And hello, Victoria, welcome aboard. I think Victoria.
Hello. So, I've been here for two poems, guys. Not my fault till I won't answer the phone after she calls me out. Quote unquote, talks too fast, ignores the long-winded one on hold. Got it. Okay. What I love about this is that it starts out kind of cold. Like, it starts out cold, the cold on your face. It starts with this thought of kind of a distance, and it's that moment where someone is yours, but perhaps they don't know it yet, or someone is yours and they don't get to act on it. And so instead, it's this buildup. It goes from, there's this kind of idea of the cold on your face countertop conveys, which kind of reminds me of, like, if you touch granite countertops, they're always cold. So imagine being naked and bent over one, just saying. But it's this idea of the contrast of warm to cold. So we start off kind of cold. We start off with this very understandable sensation of cold. And as it continues on, it's kind of this head game, mind game of bringing them to the moment where they're no longer talking about cold countertop surfaces. now we're talking about this unrestricted carnal worship, a zoo with no preserves, sleeping tigers, which just kind of reminds me of the way that cats kind of rub up against each other. It's the idea that he's now a lion, processing his pride, having that ownership, the understanding that even if you aren't always together, even if you are both roaming in a room by yourselves, you still are a pride. You're still a pack. You're still each other's and bound to each other's. And sometimes there's that beauty of watching your lover work their way through a crowd, seeing the desirable glances of others upon them, knowing that in the end, any ideas, any fantasies ultimately are going to be played out in your own bedroom. And so I think that this is a beautifully passionate piece, this idea of my pride, getting to pride in what is yours, in that community created by the lions, the metaphor of the lions. So it's a really stunning, sensual piece that I think really plays with, you know, stolen moments and varying places to be enjoyed, but in the end coming together in a way that nobody else can understand.
Great comment there, Victoria. Nice entrance into the Milu.
Thank
All right,
you.
Jean. Since you got a brief reprieve there, now it's your turn.
I know when to pass the buck. Yes, I do. Absolutely. Jeez. Now, welcome aboard, Victoria. I'm sorry it took me so long to answer the phone. I was busy commenting and such. Just thinking. Smarty pants. I thought this was a nicely done piece by DJGS. I thought it was well expressed. I like the indirect statement throughout. It started out like kind of fragmented in my mind, but then he started to knit it all back together. Not far into the piece, but it started out in pieces, and you see it pulling all together towards the end. And I thought that was a really cool way to do this. And I thought that he did a wonderful job. So excellent work, and thanks for sharing. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jean. And Greg, mm-hmm. How about you?
But I was just going to say what Victoria said, so she covered it.
There you go.
You're right. Victoria did hit on all the right pertinent notes, because that opening stance does offer up an offbeat touch to the moment. Yes, it does convey the thoughts that she offers up as far as those moments walking over a little bit of time, and the fact that there's a little play and a turn in the way this is walking around, and the fact that that back end, those last few stanzas, do walk on a note of rabid sensuality born of the moment that nobody else can indulge in. Why? Because it's ours, and that's where it stays. So nicely said there, Victoria.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right, Jean, we're coming on you again.
Okie dokie. Well, I can't imagine who the next piece might be, Bobby. Let me think now. Victoria Frost.
Yes.
Victoria Frost.
Sure.
Thanks for having me.
This is called Night Skies and Fireflies by Victoria Frost. I remember midnight summer drives, stars racing above our heads with the moon playing hide and seek behind black clouds, giving itself away in silver linings. Cooling, hot, humid air that never quite reaches comfortable, wrapping its arms around us while we scooted closer together in our camping chairs. They'd seen better days, but not yet a campsite. Reminiscing the day, the plans of the future, small to-dos that catch our attention, our eyes seeking out shooting stars between the patchwork clouds and ending on the momentary glow of a firefly. From our perch within the darkened patio, we pointed and gasped of awe as the indigo shade of night that hung within our backyard became speckled in neon blips. The beautiful glow of attraction, beads of light looking for a mate. I held your hand a little tighter, thankful I no longer had to seek, marveling at the mating dance before us. Even in the cloak of night, your eyes lit with the childlike excitement of chasing fireflies, watching them glow within your cupped hands, brought before me as a sacrifice, a living embodiment of our own mating dance. Back when we two searched, lost within the beautiful darkness, finding our other half for midnight rides, windows down with fingers dancing in the air, watching fireflies dance in passing fields, until we can't resist the temptation to run, frolicking after them when the world is asleep, unable to cast their judgment. For the world will not miss our midnight dance, the way you gathered the glow of tiny, love-seeking bugs, or the devotion such a small act cultivated in me, the desire to surround you with fireflies, to watch your joy as you share this magic with the sparkling eyes of our children, when the night is ignited in ephemeral neon flashes, and my soul is cemented as yours, from now until we both are ghosts, dancing beneath patchwork summer skies, in between the blips of fireflies. End poem.
Great read, Victoria. Thank you very much. All right, Gray, we're going to start with you, please.
Yeah, I mean, your read was beautiful, but the poem itself is as beautiful as your read. You know, it's remembering these midnight summer drives, stars racing above your heads with the moon playing hide-and-seek behind black clouds, giving itself away in silver linings. I mean, that's just so descriptive and engaging. And then the whole poem is on that level of description and engaging. You know, the imagery is fantastic, watching fireflies dance in passing fields until we can't resist the temptation to run frolicking after them when the world is asleep, unable to cast their judgment. I mean, how beautiful is that? But then you end it with, from now until we are both ghosts, dancing beneath patchwork summer skies and between the blips of fireflies. Yeah, just a beautiful, haunting poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Greg. And Jean, come on down.
My. This is a beautiful, beautiful poem all the way through, Victoria. Sitting here, I'm saying, oh, yeah, and I like that stanza. And, oh, yeah, that one, too. And, yeah, that one, too. And I said, well, I want to copy one and put it down in the bottom. And I said, well, just copy the whole freaking thing and put it down in the comments. I mean, really, like, I could never pick and choose in here. Really? How do you do that? I mean, you say, oh, I like this stanza. Yeah, well, you know, every one of them is wonderful, and I'd be lying if I didn't say that. It's amazing. You know, with the reminiscing the day, the plans of the future, small to-dos that catch our attention, our eyes seeking out shooting stars between the patchwork clouds and ending on the momentary glow of a firefly. And then, from our perch within the darkened patio, we pointed in gasps of awe as the indigo shade of night that hung within our backyard became speckled in neon blips. And then... No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to keep reading. I could, though. I really could. I think that it's wonderful. I think that it is beautifully put together. And I think it's just got wonderful, wonderful imagery. It's got a wonderful passion in it, you know, that is the backdrop of the entire poem. And I think that that is what makes it spectacular, is that backdrop. You're not just putting the relationship in the front. You are simply, how do I want to say this? You're totally making the night sky and the fireflies, they're definitely the star of the rite, but you've incorporated your real life on that. And I don't know, you know, if that's really perfect to say, but what the hell? I don't know what I'm talking about half the time. Anyway, just kidding. But I think that Don't you say nothing, Rex. Don't get yourself in trouble and say, oh, she really doesn't. But it's, I'm trying to find something that would help me express it better. You know, I love the line about watching them glow within your cupped hands brought before me as a sacrifice. That was beautiful, you know, but the firefly is still the main in that, you know, the sacrifice is prominent, but it's not, I don't know, it takes over. But it's a blip. That's the blip, like the fireflies, like in my mind. You add this in and then you go off into a little something, but it's just beautiful. I don't know. What the hell do I know? It's wonderful, Victoria, and I loved every word of it. Great job. Really, really fabulous.
Thank you, Phil.
That's what I'm going to
thank you.
Oh, I see, Jean. For me, it's the vividity that's in here. It's a stylized dance. It hits on that ritualized motif of mating, but holds notes of that teenage rawness in the moment, the childlike adventure, those little touches that one holds onto because they have depth and meaning. The Midnight Summer Dryads holds a nice note to the warm summer evenings with the top down, the cooling, hot, humid air, but not yet a campsite. So that kind of hits at the moment. You haven't really settled in anything. This is just an outgoing note of what's going on. Plans for the future, small to do. Yes, the fireflies offer up those notions of jars and collecting enough so that you have this little light bulb in your hand that you can walk around the garden with. The darkened patio was a nice touch, an interaglio, so to speak, that note between the campsite and what is to come, which would be a backyard. What else we got here? Marveling at the mating dance before us. Again, that thought to that. You keep bringing up the notations with the fireflies. Now, that is important because the cultivation in firefly is the notation that between you share a common bond, and you still got that little touch of childlike awe in the moment, and those little touches mean something because they hold a note in reality that both can attest to and walk themselves around. Again, you hit it. When the night is ignited in ephemeral neon flashes and my soul is cemented as yours for now until we both are ghosts. That rolls now from the beginning where the campsite hasn't yet been made right into the adjustment of life-long dancing gig, patchwork summer skies, and between the blips of fireflies. And you also hit on that note of dancing after midnight where the neighbors don't know what you're doing. Again, that note to a touch of a teenage angst and playfulness. Hey, let's go run naked in the park, so to speak. So you're keeping those points vividly alive because they also have their need and their function and their purpose in the moment because they still remind you of the two kids who finally got together. And if you get let go of the notion of the childlike awe and things, then you lost all that touch of innocence that you hold dear to yourself.
Said Rex. Beautifully said. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
I guess you didn't think I said it beautifully, that's for sure. But that's
you did say it beautifully, Phil.
I didn't. It was just gambling. But it was outstanding, Victoria. I think I figured out what it was. It's innocent, passionate, and it's an incredible piece. So I want to say that. Now for our last magic trick of the night, I'm going to read this last piece by Allison Hodges, and we will have cleared the board. So this is called Unbearable. My grief rolls in and out with the waves of emotion. My anger cracks across the open sky. In flashes of lightning and the sound of thunder, my disease rises. As fiercely as a volcano is spewing lava across the lowlands, the heaviness of the night lies across my shoulder. At Christ's cross bore the weight of all world pain, feeling slow like glaciers from the ice caps, capturing me in a coating of ice-cold fear. I wandered the desert of lonely desolation.
The sand blasts away the coatings that had kept me safe. I spread out through the universe, floating through the stars, hugging tight the sun, strangling out its life. I am left alone in the dark again. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. All right, Victoria, what do you think about this?
I have to say this poem gave me goosebumps. It's been a really crappy year. I've lost a lot of people this year. I didn't lose that many back in 2020 when everybody was going. But this year there's just been a lot of unfortunate deaths and similar ones. In many ways, I deeply connect with this piece. What is striking to me is that the piece is so beautifully put together that there are moments that you forget that she is talking about grief, talking about loneliness. But what is so amazing in it is that as you start to really dive into it, you realize that there's nothing that's soft and safe. Her paradise is gone. Her sanctuary has been wiped off the face of the planet. And each piece reminds that. You know, there's the seven stages of grief. And so she kind of starts off with two. My grief rolls in and out with the waves of emotion. My anger cracks across the opening sky in flashes of lightning and the sound of thunder. But from there, even though we see a storm, the next landscape is a volcano, something that burns you alive and devours you slowly, painfully, agonizingly. We're reminded of the heaviness, the sadness falls across her, equated to that of Christ bearing the cross, which in the Christian faith, of course, is the weight of the world, all sin, and a massive, massive burden to bear that pain. Then after we've been burnt and crushed, we are then frozen with the flowing glaciers from the ice cap, reminding her of just how cold she is, only to be thrown into a desert, not quite able to be thawed out as the grains of sand wear away the last remnants of armor that had once protected her, leaving her vulnerable to be cast into space, something that we look at in awe but forget that it is unsurvivable. There's no air. There's no warmth. And though you might cling to a star, it too will be snuffed out, leaving you in darkness, because that's all that gives you light and life in space is the stars that slowly fade from the sky. It's this tumbling nature of not being able to get your feet under you, not being able to be safe, to be cared for, to stay in one place, because grief is like those waves pushing you through one desolation after the next, and you never know what it's going to be. And I think she captured that beautifully and raw and painfully, that I think you can't help but experience it as you read this piece. So a marvelous, marvelous write, but at the same time, my heart breaks because this is a write that speaks to someone who is pouring out these emotions from their pen.
Wonderful comment there, Vic. Thank you very much. Gray, how about you?
It really harkens to the pain and the tragedy of somebody who's suffering illness and how haunted their lives can be. And, you know, like they just want to float up into the nothingness and, you know, there is no light where they go. And it's just a tragic tale of somebody who's living with sickness and the effects it has on their life.
Thank you, Greg. Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought the emotions were really well expressed in this piece because it does give you that that sense of sadness. I thought the depth of the sadness lingers on as you read it. But I also felt like a depression rising up in her words. And I don't know, and I could be very wrong, but it says, my disease rises. And that could also be a reference to depression in some way. And I could be wrong, but I think that there's many possibilities. But no matter what it is, I think the emotions really come through. And her way of stating things, like Victoria had said, the heaviness of the night lies across my shoulders as Christ cross bore the weight of all the world's pain. That two lines in this poem carries a lot of weight, not, you know, the weight of the world in my mind. But I think that it's an expression that a lot of people, the Christians, would understand, you know, and I think everybody can kind of get it, but I think some of us feel it a little bit differently because we look at it differently. And I find that to be an incredible spot in this poem. And I think it was just a wonderful job here by Allison. And thank you for sharing that with us tonight. I really appreciate it very much.
Well said, everybody. I hit on that, my dis-ease note as well. I think that there was a deliberate note of offering up it as a disease in the moment, but also exemplifying dis-ease itself, because what comes next is rises at fierce rates of volcanic spewing lava across the lowlands. So that disease is the boiling point, which then gives forth this this supreme anger, this volatility. But I got to go. Victoria, you hit everything with a grand thought and wonderful comment. That last stanza, I spread out through the universe, floating through stars, hugging tight the sun, strangling out its life. I am left alone again in the dark, strangling out its life. She's so damaged, forlorn, and pain-ridden in the moment that she wants everyone else to join her in the darkness to feel her pain. And then that last line hits, I am left alone in the dark again. Even though I'm strangling out the dark, there is no one else here with me except me.
Right.
So,
That's a really good thought, Rex.
Yeah, it's kind of a point of the note of reality that dawns in the moment.
Yeah.
She's looking for everybody else to feel the same thing and then realizing, oh, shit, I could do that, but I'm still alone.
Yeah. Well, and I really like that, too, because I wouldn't have thought that she wanted those others to join her, but it also fits so well with how raw this piece is, because often when
Absolutely.
We're in that deep of pain, we want company. Misery wants company. We want others
yeah.
to feel that. And so I think that's actually a really insightful comment that you have.
Well, thank you there, Victoria. Considering you came in with guns a-blazing and started lighting it up.
Hey, Phil did call me out. That's all I'm saying. She called me out, so I had to show up.
Well, you know, I have to be quite honest. None of us would have done that piece. Well, the guys might have done your piece justice, but I could never have done it. It was a beautiful piece, and I thought it deserved your voice. I got to say that
yes.
right off the top. And, of course, I'm going to call you out. You're floating around in the room, and your poem's on the board. Of course I am.
Okay, okay. I am trying to be more present. It's fine.
I see this. I appreciate it. I'm happy to have you around. Honest. I'm sure someone else is, too. It's wonderful.
I'm glad to be back around. I've missed you all. This was a marvelous show, guys. Really.
Well,
yes,
of course.
Yes, there was a lot of great pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I don't know if Phil did it intentionally, but there was a lot of really emotional, passionate pieces. Mm-hmm. And it was really fun listening to you guys while I was wrapping up some work.
Yeah, no, I never plan anything. I put up just open poetry. And, you know, if we have carryovers, you know, God bless us. And if we don't, God bless us again. We have zero on the board for next Friday. So everyone feel free to put something in. We'll be happy to have it. And since we're off the air, everybody who's here, if you all want to feel, the fun, and want to call into the 12:30 show, Heart Center, Part Saint with Ephesiana. And I believe Pam, because I think Babbler's off tonight. Then again,
I could be wrong. That might have been last week.
I mean, you did say you don't know anything, so.
I thought you said bad luck is back.
Oh, well, maybe she is. I just remember that she was. I don't know, Rex. Don't start. The only thing I remember is as I went to say that, I remember Pam saying she was going to bed early, and I'm like, oh, that could be a problem. So I'm not sure. But, yes, we definitely have to take a peek at Aphasiana and make sure she's got company. But anyway, thank you all for joining in. Thanks, Victoria, for calling. It was fun to hear from you at the end of the show. Gray, thank you so much for calling us from the get-go. It was great to have you with us all night. Rex, as always, thank you for being a wonderful co-host. And thank you, everybody, who put in wonderful poetry tonight. It was really a joy. Lots of wonderful pieces coming from different directions and just fabulous work. And thanks for sharing. So that's it. Anything else exciting you need to know? Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, guys. Thanks, Grace and Victoria.
Take care.
Good night, everybody. Much love.
Good night, gang.
All right.